When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following production is part of the We Be Geeks podcast collective.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
That's right, it's me, it's your Spider-Pan, Jeremy. Did you miss me? You only had like a few days in between podcasts, so you hopefully didn't miss me too much. And Lost Boy Philip is with me. Hello.
Hello.
And we will be joined later in the show by Chris Cowan of the Stunning and Brave podcast. We're going to talk all about some DC Comics in the 90s, mainly focusing a lot on, did you know they killed Superman in the 90s?
Oh my goodness.
What? Yeah, I know. I mean...
killing a hero? That's never done.
That's never been done before, has it? And they broke the Batman.
Will they bring him back?
Golly, I don't know. Did they bring Superman back?
I don't know. Can they heal a back? I don't know.
I mean, wow. Ooh. But so that's coming up later. But of course, we've also got some coverage of the new Disney film, The Jungle Cruise, which is the latest Disney film based on an attraction at a Disney park. We'll tell you what we thought about that. We have at least one new story we want to look at, and of course we have a visit to the trailer park coming up with a couple of trailers that I did not expect to get to see, but I enjoyed watching both of them. So let's fly away to Neverland here, and we'll dive right into the Fandom Nexus with a bit of news.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Okay, normally I guess, yeah, we would have some host chatter though, wouldn't we?
Usually.
But I didn't really have anything to chatter about other than, you know, I'm still watching Friends and I'm still watching Chuck. I think there was something actually that popped up in Chuck that I thought was interesting and now I can't think of what it was.
Well, it must not have been that interesting.
Well, No, it was something. I was watching Chuck this week, and something came to mind that I thought would be worth sharing, and I cannot think of what it was. So we don't have much for a host chatter here. But one Shazam. Thing, that, you know, the big elephant in the room news story was Scarlett Johansson, and, you know, she does have some stuff in her contract. Because Disney released, she's saying that this is a breach of the contract she had on the amount of money she's supposed to earn based on theater sales.
The release, yeah.
And she didn't get as much theater sales, she's saying, based upon people being able to stream it at home. And I can understand that.
She might be right.
Yeah. And here's the quote that says that the lawsuit says. It says, Disney intentionally induced Marvel's breach of the agreement without justification in order to prevent Ms. Johansson from realizing the full benefit of her bargain with Marvel. That's what the suit says. They filed over in Los Angeles Superior Court on Thursday. I'm reading this from the New York Post. Thursday, Disney says There is no merit to Johansson's legal salvo, and that it is especially sad and distressing in its callous disregard for the horrific and prolonged global effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Disney has fully complied with Ms. Johansson's contract, and furthermore, the release of Black Widow on Disney Plus with Premier Access has significantly enhanced her ability to earn additional compensation on top of the $20 million she has received to date. Personally, I kind of have to agree with Disney. I understand where she's coming from, because you want to make sure your contract is fulfilled, but dadgummit, $20 million wasn't enough for you?
Yeah.
And yes, with the world has kind of changed with COVID-19, and more people are watching from home. Now, we went to the theater. We watched it.
Yeah.
I still love going to the theater. We actually just came out of the theater because we wanted to watch Jungle Cruise.
But we're also in a different area, a rural area. I don't even know if I can say that word.
We're suburban.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Suburbanized. but compared to places like New York and Boston and all, to them, this would be rural to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can go to a theater where there's not that many people, especially if you go in the day like we do usually.
Yeah.
And so sometimes we go at night, but not usually.
Yeah.
So
even from the receipts from theaters, it's, you know, what they're calling like, oh, well, that was a good turnout. It made $25 million in the theater domestically. That is low compared to what we expect for these blockbusters movies. But the movie industry is excited about it because it is at least people going back to the theater. But not as many people are going back to the theater as, you know, you would have expected.
And to their defense, talking about the stars and all.
Yeah.
I understand that they're wanting, you know, a big box office smash like they did for so long. They got, I hate to say spoiled to it, but
maybe they did.
But that being said, you know, we all want it to go back to normal like it was. But at the same time, some things are not ever going to go back to the way it once was. They have to, because of the scare, but also there are going to be films that are going to be released at home. And that might be for the better. It might be for the worse. Maybe it will go back. Who knows? But when people do pay a lot of extra money, which some of us have, you'd still get extra money in your account, so to speak. I'm talking about her now. And so, you know, it's not like she's going poor from it.
I don't know how much we're going to go back to any sort of normal, because a lot of people now, if it's me or just me and my wife, I can still pay less going to the theater for us to watch it than what people are paying for Premier Access. But people who have children and they want to go see the latest Disney movie, they're finding it cheaper to just pay the $30 and they can watch it as much as they want. I can understand that. And, you know, the world has changed, and I don't know if that will ever go back. If Disney sees benefit to having Premier Access like that, they're going to continue to do it. But I would really love to be able to go to see more movies in the theater. But I do understand that, you know, a lot of families are willing to just fork over $30 because they'd pay $50 if they took their whole family to the theater.
Now, for me personally, there are some times that I can't, because I do have physical issues and I can't drive. So unless I meet somebody who's going to go, like Jeremy here or others, I can't always go. Mm. And so therefore, there are times that I just have to go, well, I'll get HBO Max or whatever it is that I have. Yeah.
Fortunately, we like a lot of the same movies.
Yeah, therefore, our nerdyisms go together. Mm-hmm. But I'll be honest with you, the reason why I got HBO Max was because at the time, nobody could really go to the theater much, and it was getting Wonder Woman at the time, and I wanted to see it.
Yeah, the Wonder Woman 1984. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And I watched it plenty, let me tell you.
This is a sort of a news story, but it almost would fit into our review.
Sure.
This caught me off guard, but I guess the news, and I'm going to read this right from Metallica.com. It says, basically, should you head out to the theater or fire up Disney Plus Premier Plus Access at home this Friday, you might recognize a certain song that appears twice in the movie Jungle Cruise, a never heard before, totally new and different version of Nothing Else Matters. This was, and I even watched in the credits because I recognized it at the beginning of the movie. This was the actual guys from Metallica working with composer James Newton Howard and reimagined the song, rearranged it, and with Metallica actually playing with the orchestra. And I did not know it was coming. They kept this. They played this close to the chest. But I've got onto the iTunes. I bought that one song because I was like, I got to get this. This was so cool. And it fits so well in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, but I mean, that's big news. Metallica has now made an appearance or played a song for a Disney movie. This has got to be the first time ever.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
And even when I heard it, when the Disney logos, I leaned over to you, and I'm like,
yep.
Metallica's in a Disney movie.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Metallica in a Disney movie. I mean, my goodness. That is, I mean,
now
wow.
I can't help but imagine Mickey Mouse in spandex and playing on the guitar.
Oh, my goodness. Well, this is, I mean, technically, you know, Marvel movies are Disney movies, but getting to hear Led Zeppelin and Thor Ragnarok was, you know, pretty cool anyway. But
the whole time I was with
Marvel films have kind of set a precedent ever since Guardians of the Galaxy, really, of having some great classic rock songs already. So that was still pretty cool getting to hear Led Zeppelin twice in,
I remember,
in Ragnarok.
When I'm at Disney, I think at the time it was, I don't remember if it was MGM still, and that might have been, but either way, Hollywood or Hollywood, whatever they call it, I can't remember. But anyway, I was there in listening to Aerosmith songs on their ride, and I just thought that was really awesome.
Yeah.
Because to hear Aerosmith be playing next to Disney stuff, my mom and dad didn't care for it much, but I didn't care. I was still saying, yeah.
Slightly edited versions because, you know.
Sure, they had to.
Aerosmith is king of innuendos.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? But I was sitting there to myself saying, dude, looks like a lady.
That's part of what made that roller coaster fun. Having some Aerosmith music.
I loved it, man. I remember on that old ride they had, the old game they had where you could kind of be on that ride for a little while. And it was a lot of fun.
Was that cart game you had?
Yeah, it was fun. For a short while they had that. That was great.
I need to find myself a copy of that sometime.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all we really wanted to dive into for news is just a couple of stories. I mean, really, we covered a lot of things and a podcast you just had a few days ago.
Yep.
And we've got a really great conversation come up later, so we're going to just keep the show moving. We're going to go next to the trailer park.
Mama, another gator got in the house.
Another gator? Give me that shovel. Come here.
Get him, Mama. Get that gator.
The Neverland Trailer Park.
I didn't know that this movie was coming. But when I saw the poster, we were both like, oh my gosh, I remember my teacher reading these books and when I was in elementary, Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, you know, younger kids or even like even some of the millennial generation probably remembers watching. There was an animated series, I think, on PBS or something.
Yeah, it was really cute. I used to watch it. I think it was Nickelodeon or something to that effect. I watched it with my nephews a lot.
Yeah, but now they're getting a movie of Clifford the Big Red, and obviously he's a computer-generated dog the entire time.
Yeah.
But it just looks so cute.
And it looks so real to in the sense that if you ever wanted to see that dog come to life, I used to read the books, and then there was somewhat of a comic strip, in a sense, when online with the children and all. I used to read to them, and I babysat a lot of children throughout my nephews and nieces, and so to me it was really neat kind of seeing this come to life. There's even little books I used to read to him about Clifford. And I remember they used to sell little toys of Clifford.
Yeah.
And I used to get one for my nephews, and I loved that.
There's even a Thanksgiving Day Parade balloon of Clifford.
Yep.
Clifford's been around a long time. You know, actual size.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I don't recall ever in the books them giving a reason for why Clifford was so big. And so seeing in the movie having this cute little bit of magic that makes Clifford grow to be that big. This is probably aimed at little kids. I'm going though.
Oh yeah. It looks
cute. I'm going.
I'll see if I can't get some of the little ones to go with me. But then again, if they don't, they don't. I still see it.
Yeah. So yeah, we're excited because this just hit all the right nostalgia buttons, and it's not aimed at us. Sort of like we also saw a preview for Paw Patrol. Definitely not aimed at me, but I think, you know, kids are going to love that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to skip Paw Patrol.
Well, some kids I know who I've watched it with them before. If they go,
TV show.
I may go with them. And they watch that show with them, you know, and they're adorable little kids, and they have the toys of it, and they even have the tower of it. And I bought like a few toys for them, and they love it. And you know who you are, Reese.
I think the kids are going to go wild over that Paw Patrol. But anyways, that's not one of our trailer park movies because that's not really for people our age, clearly. Nope. But we finally got a first teaser look at Disney's film coming up, I believe it said even this fall, Encantada. I hope I'm saying that right.
I don't know.
And we finally, because we've gotten to see some imagery a little bit, and it's just beautiful and colorful, and it looked, wow, this looks like it's going to be just a beauty to look at. Now we finally got to be introduced to a few characters, and it appears to be about this family with, they're calling him gifts, whether it's magic or whatever, but they have powers.
It's like almost an entire island worth.
Well, I think they seem to focus on that family.
Sure, like a tribe almost, you mean? Like?
Well, no, like the family that house.
Yeah,
everybody in the family,
right,
except Mirabelle, has no gifts. You know, of course, I'm still thinking Sky High, where the powers are going to show up before the end of the movie. I think they're going to go that route, but it looks delightfully silly and fun, and I the design of it. I mean, I love the colors just pop off the screen. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be a lot of fun.
Movie, so. And music by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Now I don't know who that is, honestly.
He did all the music for Moana.
Okay, well,
Hamilton. That In the
Heights
movie.
I have yet to see that.
He's a very talented songwriter.
I was gonna say I love the stuff from Moana. That was very good.
Yeah, such great songs in Moana. So this is more music from him. So that's enough
admit,
to get me
while watching
interested.
The preview, I was thinking Moana, and maybe it was just the music background, or maybe because it's kind of islandish.
Mm-hmm.
But so maybe it's both. But either way, it does look good.
Yes, indeedy. So a little bit of a tease. I'm sure we'll get a full trailer probably maybe I would say at least September, October, because I think they said they were going to release this probably in November, which is actually a good time to release a Disney animated film in November around Thanksgiving.
I was thinking the same thing, honestly.
That's in my heart. That's where Disney movies come out.
Thanksgiving-ish, early Disney, early December, early Disney, but I meant to say early Christmassy type.
In time,
you know,
for the family to go out for Thanksgiving.
Yep. Yes.
I remember Oliver and Company. We went to the theater on Thanksgiving.
And then later on, Little Mermaid and all that.
Yes. Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
It was Aladdin. It was like last day of school before Thanksgiving break, I think it was. I went to go see Beauty and the Beast.
Until Lion King, they started doing the summer stuff. I'm talking the modern.
But they have, I think because Frozen came out in November. So, I mean, they still do some stuff in November, but it always just feels special to me to be like Christmas time is the time I'm going to see a Disney animated movie.
Sure.
Right. Indeedy-doo. So, yes, we're very excited for Encantada. And now, as we're moving right along, I don't have a sounder for this, but it is time to review The Jungle Cruise. So, of course, this featured Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Emily Blunt, who, of course, The Rock has become a much better actor than, when he was the Scorpion King. I thought he was terrible. But he's gotten to be a good actor. And he's, as you observed,
in his defense,
Popeye.
In his defense, that Scorpion King, the computer effects were horrible.
But even his part at the beginning, like, he's just, it's, I, it,
yeah,
didn't
he
work.
Wasn't great. But that was his first movie, too.
Right, his first movie.
In this film, he did. He reminded me a lot of Popeye in
with
the beginning.
That
hat. He reminded me of Popeye the way he was, because he's, the fact is, he's a good actor, but he's also a tongue-in-cheek, corny guy.
And boy, was this movie corny.
And he's good. Yeah, it reminded me, I was telling you earlier, reminded me of a combination of Popeye and Indiana Jones. I kept in my mind saying, it's Popeye and Jones. I love it.
Yeah. With a lot of the stuff, The Mummy, the characters really remind me of characters
especially
from The Mummy.
Later in the film, when you had a lot of those, I don't know what I want to ruin anything for you.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but there was
supernatural-ish.
Yeah, because I mean, you can, clearly, if you watch the trailer, there's a supernatural element to the story. But it is funny. There are all kinds of corny Skipper jokes. Even some Skipper jokes you're going to recognize. There's a backside of water and all that stuff.
That's one thing I liked, was they're kind of mocking the Jungle Cruise, because the Jungle Cruise is full. I'm talking about from the Disney ride.
Yeah,
full of cornball stuff. And I hate to say this, and it may sound like I'm disrespecting my own father, but from that generation, at least my dad, he had such cornball jokes, and almost I could almost hear every time he would tell something. He was a pastor. I would almost hear wah, 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 when he'd say stuff. And that's why I loved it in the beginning when he was telling all these horrible, corny jokes.
Oh, yes.
I was thinking, it makes me miss my dad.
Get in there and get the Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character, the skipper, Frankie.
Yeah.
And you've got an entire Jungle Cruise ride thing going on with him, and it was so funny.
It was wonderful.
And great. Fans of the Jungle Cruise ride, you're gonna love this.
Yes.
We even surprised did have Trader Sam as a side character.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun, great, just corny, cheesy adventure fun,
and really good actors on the side that some of them didn't even play big characters, but they good actors. So I recognized right away, I was like, but I won't say who they are because I want you to see them. But I was like, wow, I can't believe they're in this. And I didn't expect it. And I thought it was really great. They did a really good job.
Yeah. And they really kept tied to the chest on who the villains are, other than they showed that there is a submarine and that they're going to find this flowering tree. And it's this big thing. But they've really haven't told a whole lot about the story and everything. So I won't either.
And I didn't expect the actor I don't remember his name, but I recognized him from
See, I didn't watch Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, Friday Night Lights.
He
was a great young guy in that. He
Maybe
played kind of the wimpy kid. Wasn't even a football player through most of at least in the first season. In the second season, he came into playing football, and he was the main kid's best friend. But he ended up, he did an outstanding job in this movie. He plays somewhat of the villain. He was the villain, but I would never expected that from him back in the day. But I'm telling you, he was good. And that's why you have somewhat of an Indiana Jones feel to it, too. You have Nazi-type guys, you know, coming in.
Well, yeah, it's around World War One time, yeah, and there's Germans.
But it's German.
I wasn't going to mention that.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I want to
keep everything a surprise, because if they didn't say it in the trailer, I didn't want to say it here. But that's right. So now you all know.
It is not a Nazi, but a German. Anyway, yeah. He has that kind of a feel about it. Very Indiana Jones. And like I said, very much Popeye feel, too, because the fighting has got a Popeye-like. You know, I couldn't help it.
At times,
I kept wanting to go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I couldn't help it, man. I was like, get him a can of spinach.
Yeah, my goodness. And
he's so good at that corny stuff. We're talking about The Rock.
Paul Giamatti having him pop up in there. Even though he doesn't have a big part, he was really fun to see.
Yeah, well, he's a great actor.
Yeah, I am trying to find.
He yells Frank guy. Once, and it reminded me of his role where he yells Fred in Fred Claus.
But he hollers, Frank.
Yeah, he goes, Frank.
Okay, Jesse Plemons is the actor who plays kind of the main villain. And let's see, I'm looking for something I might recognize him for.
He carries the film as the villain through the whole thing, usually, for the most part.
Well, he's been in a lot of different things.
Yeah, he has.
Fargo, the TV series, that's interesting.
Yeah, he was.
But I don't see anything that I mean, because he looked familiar to me.
Yeah.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
He was in that Battleship movie.
He was good in that, too. He was good in that.
But I'm not seeing anything that I recognize.
Good actor.
That I saw him in. My goodness. But he looked kind of familiar to me.
But one thing I like.
No, he was in Sabrina the Teenage Witch as bigger kid. Even popped up in Varsity Blues and Walker, Texas Ranger.
He'll get it eventually.
Yeah, I'll be able to say it.
What I like about the film, too, is that it goes through a change throughout the thing about how the characters behave. You know, I like.
Yeah, there's a bit of character growth.
I like that a lot.
And I like it because you see, like, Emily Blunt's character is rather reckless. And I like her description of she just dives head first. And there's a really funny scene where she's dove head first. And she's doing like an Indiana Jones, trying to be Indiana Jones. And The Rock is just, you know, his character is like, you might want to come down from, you know, you're really not being, you might want to come down. And then when it goes wrong for her, he's like, I was trying to tell you.
Yeah. It's like,
it's just like she's doing these crazy stuff, but she's really awesome. Not prepared to do any of it. But she's making it up as she goes. She doesn't know what she's doing, but she's just head first diving into which has made her fun.
I love that not everything goes right, too.
Right.
And that's what I like
stuff
about
goes wrong for her.
Because it's cornball and it's a blast. It was a lot. Like I said, it was like a human cartoon, like a real life cartoon. It was fun.
Yeah. And there is one element that I don't want to say too much. But I have a feeling that there's going to be some people who are going to say something. So, well, there's a big stereotype because there is a character who is extremely stereotype. And I saw it coming when the character at one point, I was like, oh, this character is going to be like this because he's matching all the stereotypes. But that's all I'm going to say about it.
It ended up being a good character, too.
Yeah, he was an enjoyable character.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, he fit a lot of stereotypes. And I have a feeling Disney's going to take a little flack for that, perhaps. We'll see.
I enjoyed it.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun, lots of fun action, it's cheesy as heck. The action is cheesy, but that's part what makes it fun.
Yeah, the humor.
And it's the Jungle Cruise. It's supposed to be cheesy because the jokes are cheesy.
Yeah, the whole thing. And they fit in a lot of things from the ride, too.
Yes, they did.
Even
Rosita.
Uh-huh,
what happened to Rosita. There's pretty much a tiki room bird there as well.
Because that's always right there next to the
ride. Yeah, it's right there. So we definitely recommend this movie. It was a heck of a lot of fun.
It made me want to go to the park and get myself a Dole Whip.
Oh, and I forgot. I was going to try to go. Well, we kind of got sidetracked. There's something for host chatter because I was thinking, you know, if we go to North Kansas City, there is a place to get a Dole Whip around here. But here's kind of a funny, bad story, I guess. But as we came out of the theater, they were looking for the owner of my car, which was me. Some other guy's car, poor guy, his parking brake failed and his car rolled and hit my car. We're working on that right now. So that was kind of a surprise, but made me completely forget we were going to go get a Dole Whip.
Yeah, well, instead your car got whipped.
Yeah, my car got whipped. So, yeah, we'll hopefully get that taken care of pretty quickly. So, and he was a nice guy and we were nice people. He was glad we were nice people. So. It's gonna work out fine, but that was kind of a surprise for the end of the movie. But anyways,
surprise ending.
Surprise ending. But let's get in. We've got a great conversation with Chris Cowan from Stunning and Brave. Well, you know what? I'm gonna introduce him as we get in here. But let's just jump right on over to that. All right, so we're going to do something, and we've been, yes, breaking away from Disney here for quite some time. We're still doing some Disney. Sure. Like I said, I still love Mickey Mouse, but I feel a little betrayed. Anyways, but we're going to go completely opposite in the opposite direction, not even talking Marvel today. We're going to talk some DC Comics.
Yeah, I like that.
But this could be funny, because I got promised, y'all thought James Kennison was funny when we had him on here. I've got, for all of you who are a big smart aleck, I found probably the biggest smart aleck you've ever heard on any show. I found his show. It's called Stunning and Brave. They're an equal opportunity offender. Very tongue-in-cheek, this show, if you ever check it out.
It's like Seinfeld.
Very tongue-in-cheek like Seinfeld. Yeah. Yes. So no soup for Chris.
No soup for
you. But this is Chris Cowan, which you've had a lot of different shows. Apparently, I haven't listened to all the other stuff. I just came across Stunning and Brave. I don't even remember. I think I found Stunning and Brave because I think James Kennison on that story show had mentioned it. I was like, well, let me go check it out, because I need more comedy shows in my life. And it is, there's no way really to explain it besides equal opportunity offender, but it's very tongue-in-cheek. You have to be able to laugh at yourself, and you have to laugh at some of the stuff going on in the world, because if you don't laugh at it, you're going to cringe, and cringe so much you're going to wind up looking like the Grinch. There's so many cringeworthy things that happen on social media in the world today that, so Chris Cowan allows us to laugh at it with his smart aleckness and sometimes saying something that's entirely inappropriate, but it's, I have a dark sense of humor, so I still laugh.
I like to call it smartcasm.
Smartcasm.
There you go.
There we go.
I like it, because it was smart aleck and clear, sarcasm.
Yeah.
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 No,
the words you're combining are smart and sarcasm.
Right.
Yeah. Smart. In case anybody got the wrong idea.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I am the guy who never grows up. I am the pan here in Neverland.
You never grow up.
I'm immature. I will laugh at fart jokes.
Youngster.
I still think farts are fun. Okay. Anyways, to get us on track. So we're going to be talking some of the 90s DC comics, and mainly we're actually coming up. We realized 1992 and 1993 was the death of Superman and Batman Nightfall. Mm-hmm. Can you realize that's 30 years ago?
I know, you're making me cry.
I'm old
in my heart.
Crazy.
Amen.
Yeah.
I still got all those comics. I see you do too. And I keep those around all the time. That's it.
Ooh, wow.
I got a big stack that I brought with me.
I keep them around. You know, I live in that time, man. I really do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Philip is the biggest Superman fan you will ever meet.
Literally, in the sense of size and stature.
Yeah, he's a big man. He has 6'4", aren't you? Yeah.
I have a friend who might give you some competition in both size and being the biggest Superman fan.
I'm glad to know that, because
I sense a bromance could be coming.
Hey, I'm glad to know that, because I get mocked a lot of times. Yeah. I wear a lot of crazy ties, and I just now starting to get some
beach
shirts and all, and I like to wear ties. I wear Superman ties and other things too. I try to connect it to sermons, and use different people as examples and things, and just for the fun of it. I like that kind of stuff. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a Superman tie clip. So.
Oh, awesome. Nice. Got one. Love it. I love it. That's great. I even got one that had a little bit of kryptonite in there. I got from Metropolis, Illinois. And,
That's awesome.
Yeah, it had a little bit of kryptonite in there. And that's why I always feel so weak. Probably why I have seizures during that. No, I'm kidding.
Probably not a good idea to wear that then there, Clark.
Oh, just kidding.
So. It's actually so bad that we actually did a fan film called Supers, because I'm the big Spider-Man fan, which is I'm the Spider-Pan, because I'm the Pan of Neverland and a Spider-Man fan. But we did a fan film called Supers that I, almost in the vein of Clerks as being a bit of slackers, but we took the concepts before they made a movie of Civil War. We took the concepts of Civil War and said, well, what if that happened in the DC universe and the Marvel universe? Spider-Man and Superman has retired, grown kind of overweight, and they slowly kind of worked their way back. And we've got a really goofy fan film we made. How many years ago was that?
Way too long. It's
you were still married at the time.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. So
I almost want to cut the ending of the movie is very funny, but that's also where your wife, ex-wife appears. I almost want to cut that part out of the movie. It's on YouTube.
Roll along.
But I think it's hilarious. It's very funny. We didn't really write a script. We just kind of improved it, but we were Spider-Man and Superman, because that's kind of us. I'm the weird personality.
I need to see this.
He's the Boy Scout and I'm the weirdo, so we kind of got the same personality anyway.
That's awesome.
Anyway,
so how old were you when this all happened with that, because the first one was the death of Superman, and that one just rocked everything. So I remember I was high school age.
Yeah, so I was I was actually probably 6 or 7.
Yeah,
honestly.
That's what I was thinking. You look to be a lot younger than us.
I imagine you're about 10 years younger than me. I was about 16. So
okay, there you go. Yeah, I was born in 85, so I was just a young child, and so I didn't actually follow these storylines live, other than obviously, you know, when Superman died, like that was like front page, yes, of our newspaper.
Sure.
And it was like being reported on here, and there was a huge deal. And cause I think their marketing team at the time was really on it. Like, yeah, this wasn't actually the first time Superman had ever like died,
yeah,
you know,
quote unquote, yeah.
But they made a big deal about this, and they turned it into this big storyline.
Sure. Yeah.
And there were like articles that people were writing about how, you know, like this is a sign of a new era of like, I don't think Superman's really going to come back. And it's like, of course Superman's going to come back.
And it was already in the plans. I mean, you know that. And I know it now. But at the time, you know, we didn't. Yeah. And
I mean, so it wasn't actually, he's the original. He's the greatest. You can't kill him.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't actually till like I was probably a teenager or something that I actually started going back, and kind of actually reading the death of Story Man, death of Superman storyline.
Gotta make a character, you know, of that now.
Yeah. And then I see, my favorite part though was I collected all the Rise of the Superman that kind of followed that.
I loved it.
Cause that was huge. That was awesome. I really liked what they did with that.
I even collected the toys when they brought out the toys a couple of years later. I had those at the time, and that's because they had too many muscles on all of them. You know how they always had to do. But at the time, I was made fun of for liking Superman because they kind of revolted as Superman after Superman 4.
I watched that one way too many more times than I would care to confess.
But I actually like things about it. I'm not going to say I like the film itself, but first of all, I'm a Gene Hackman fan.
Oh, yeah.
I love Gene Hackman. He was in it, and I like that part of it. And Gene Hackman was in it because Christopher Reeve, and that was the reason why he was in it. It wasn't the greatest film, but...
It was a canon film, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, that's right. The special effects and all that. But all that being said, I remember wanting so badly for Superman to have a comeback. And so in comic book world, at least... He had one with the death, and I won't say resurrection because I'm, you know, I don't want to do that, but we'll say comeback.
Well, when you find out he didn't really die, needed a recharge.
So I was really glad to see a comeback of Superman, and I was like, about time. So when they brought the toys out, it was pretty much the toys of the comic book of his death and coming back and all that. And they had all these toys at the time. Even though he wasn't very big, I like to see Doomsday when they brought him back. I was like, finally, you know, and I liked all that stuff.
Yeah. But it was just I feel like it was a good time for Superman to die.
Yeah. Because
I think you're right. It was it was a time when people were becoming a little less like, you know, he was getting to be cheesy. Like Marvel was clearly, you know, the established, like, this is the cool superhero company. And then DC has, you know, really since the 60s, DC's really struggled to kind of overcome their like dated and cheesy kind of vibe that they've had for a while, pretty much for any character who wasn't Batman.
Batman had Frank Miller to completely turn that on its head.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it had been for the 89 Batman movie,
which really blew me away, because I was so used to the Adam West Batman and watching Super Friends when I was a kid. And so that's the Batman I was used to. And then that Tim Burton movie came out, and I was like, this is not the Batman I know.
So. Yeah.
What was you saying?
Well, I was saying I think it was like 85. They did a reboot of Superman.
They did. It was like 85 or 86. Yeah.
Yeah. And they did. And that was, I think that was a smart move. And that was a good attempt on their end to kind of like reinvigorate interest in him. And they did a good job of they got rid of the whole Superboy concept.
They did. What had happened was that's when they did the whole deal where Flash had to run around the whole Earth and you get rid of it was a good deal because you got to kind of keep all your favorite things. For instance, Paul Kent got to stay alive.
Yeah.
And you got to redo everything you want to do with your characters and keep what you like, get rid of what you don't. And that's why I was confused watching. I still love one of my favorite movies of all time, Superman, the 1978 movie.
Was that part of the Crisis of on Infinite Earths?
That's what it was.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
And see, that Marvel redid.
Guy, I'm guessing it's stuff at DC.
They did everything, redid it all. They still kept their style, but they got to redo everything they wanted. And you got the new Blue Beetle and all that kind of stuff. I loved him and all that stuff. And anyway,
that was back like when rebooting your entire comic book universe wasn't just like an annual thing.
Pretty much
is these days. They've done it like what?
Umpteen
like
10 times. Yeah,
in the last
that's true.
Decades.
Like, that's true.
They did, you know, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, Final Plus Crisis, Zero Hour. Yeah. Like,
well, Crisis could be a
New 52. Yeah.
And then New 52 again, and New 52 too.
Yeah.
And they should really make Crisis, DC Crisis could be a cereal company, you know, like DC Crisis cereal crunch.
Crisis crisps.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a tragedy in every bite.
I feel like the biggest sign, though, that they really needed to kill off Superman was by the time the death of Superman came around, the dude freaking had like a mullet. And
oh,
I'm like, you know, at that point, Superman has jumped the shark. Time to just.
Yeah, that was after his death. After his death, they brought it back, and he had a big mullet thing, and it was all combed back. And I know they were trying.
He had the long hair before that, didn't he?
No, he's after.
He started to look.
You're right. You're totally right. You're totally right. I was thinking.
No, it's okay. They were trying. I think what they're trying to do is give you a sign of the before and after.
Yeah.
And but he did get a mullet, and I gotta be honest, I didn't like it. Well, it was kind of this whole Bishop thing that only you can see this, but this whole Bishop look, and I didn't like it. But the only thing I liked about it was that you knew, oh, here's before death, here's after death Superman.
Right.
I did like when he came out and he was wearing all black. Not that I wanted him to keep it because I'm old school. I like the blue and all that. But I liked later on when I still like the old school look. I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm old school.
I'm with you. I don't mind like some of the more modern adjustments where they kind of stylize it a little bit, but I feel like you can't get rid of the red shorts.
I'm like you, even
like
they,
you can make them a little less baggy or whatever.
Sure.
To make it look more, I don't know, structural, but you got to have the red shorts.
I'm right there with you. You know, what's funny, before he died on there, I'm like 15, 16. I'm sitting there saying they need to get rid of the shorts, blah, 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 blah. They need to get rid of the underwear, I called it. And then I said, after he came back,
you're always trying to get Superman out of his underwear.
Yeah. But then when he came back and I became a bigger and bigger fan, I kept saying, no, he's got to keep it. He's got to keep it. It's like I became and I guess I was aging like my father was at the time. He's no longer with me. But I remember it's like I become more my father. And I say, no. Mm-hmm. There's something about that classic look. The older you become, you start to realize, no, he's that way for a reason. I started realizing something too about that. Even if they're just going to have the belt, at least the belt has to have, and they do this sometimes, he has to at least have red on the top and on the bottom. I'm talking about for me.
Yeah.
He has to have red on the top and on the bottom, if nothing else, because I'm an artist, and you have to have color scheme wise. Without it, it looks stupid. It doesn't look right. It looks, something looks blank. Something doesn't look right. I'm talking about for myself. It just doesn't look right. And so every time I'm not trying to put anyone down if they like them, but I do not like the newer films of Superman very much. And I miss every time that he comes out and he's wearing this really dark blue and he doesn't have any red down there or anything. I'm like, something's not right. Yeah.
We wish Christopher Reeve was still alive.
Oh, we love you, Chris.
Come back one more time.
Yeah.
And you too, Chris. But I'll talk about it.
Yeah. So you came from like a different age. I'm like, for us, like, you know, I was born in 77. And so like my first real, I think, superhero probably was Superman. Because I remember when they put the extended version on television and it became this thing. It was a two-night event.
Yeah.
I mean, Superman was like the hero. Of course, I had my other thing Saturday mornings. I had Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And, you know, the Spider-Man love was already there. But Superman was like the king superhero back there with the Christopher Reeve films. And that is the way to me. Christopher Reeve just embodied who Superman was and how he behaved. And even when I was reading at the time that it happened, I think I borrowed the book from you when you got the collection of the Death of Superman. the way he sits there in the beginning of the story where he's talking like to a class and there's all these cameras, the way he's standing there and gesturing, I could see Christopher Reeve had an influence even on the comics, the way he seemed to, the way they would draw him. This like, this is the way Christopher Reeve kind of would gesture and stuff. And he even looked a little like Christopher Reeve to me. So it was so much this embodiment. But what was interesting with killing him, and I remember seeing there was a special about this, and there one of the writers of the team of writers, he would come in every time they would meet. So, okay, what are we going to do with Superman for the next few months? What's the next big thing that's going to happen?
Yeah.
He would always suggest, well, there's nothing left to do with him. He's so powerful. We keep having to come up with super things for him to even be matched. Let's just kill him. And he would come every meeting. That'd be the first thing out of his mouth. Let's just kill him. And they would all be like, ah, that's funny.
Yeah.
And then one person said, yeah, let's kill him. And then, and the crazy thing is, you think Superman is overpowered. Doomsday is like 10 times as overpowered, because even if you beat him, he suddenly can't be beat the same way anymore.
Yeah.
He gets stronger. I mean, goodness, how do you cannot stop Doomsday enough times.
Yeah. So,
but that's the only way you could come up with something that could actually possibly kill Superman is Doomsday, unless Darkseid. I mean, Darkseid, I think, could have done it, too.
But. Yeah.
You're talking about the back when you were really, really young. You had just been a baby at the time, but they brought out a cartoon in 1988 or 89. I think it was 89. And I now have every episode of it, but it was a pretty rare cartoon, pretty neat. I mean, this cartoon has this right when they started letting Pa Kent live, John, you know, Jonathan. And so it was right after they did the whole change with the crisis. And because I remember as a kid, I was like, what? I thought his dad was dead. But what's great was now this great cartoon. And with it, they have these moments where they say, oh, back on in Smallville. And so I got to start learning about Smallville, and it showed memories of him when he was a kid and how his dad took him out and he was practicing driving and all this stuff. And with that, the great thing I loved was they even had the theme song of the John Williams music. And it was so great. I love that old show. And I remember I would feel so stupid because I was at this time, I'm like 12 or 13. I'd run around my yard. Something about that music gets to me to this day.
No, you're not talking about the early 90s, like Adventures of Superman.
It was something like that. Yeah, but it came out
still early 90s.
89, it came out 89. To 90.
Yeah, this was then, who animated this one? It's not the Filmation series. Filmation.
No, it wasn't Filmation, but it was it was a small...
It wasn't by the same guy who did the Batman.
Right. This was cartoon. Okay. This was a much earlier. It's a fun series, but yeah, the
it was very small company, the 90s and I really can't remember. This was before they did the Batman animated series.
Yeah. This is even, I think, before the Tim Burton Batman had to come out.
Yeah, it was right. And so it was like 88, I think.
Yeah, if not earlier.
Because it was, I believe, the same year. I believe it was the same year that the last Superman movie came out with Christopher Reeve. And I could be wrong about that. Or it was a year after. But it was really, really good. And I remember running around in circles. I, like I said, I felt like an idiot in a way, but I felt so good running like
every kid of our generation put a towel on their back. Tied it around and then Superman. Now kids in the 90s, after the Batman, I'm sure a lot of kids put a towel around their neck and they're Batman. But for us, it was that towel around the neck.
I did that Superman. Too, but I was the Adam West.
I did. I actually had a custom superhero shirt or a cape. Just a red one. But it was, I would go around, I would be Super Chris.
And I love it.
Like, three or something.
That's great.
But I would wear that everywhere. I wore it to church.
Oh, that's great, Chris. That's great.
I would wear it everywhere. It was ridiculous.
Oh,
and
man.
I would insist people call me like Super Chris. It was
you're
weird.
The Cape Crusader.
Yeah. Cape Crusader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. That's it. I love it.
I just love that. Like the whole like. The death of Superman kind of like triggered something in DC where they just decided, you know what, let's just go crazy. And I think it probably had to do with like you said, like we've covered everything. The guy was just like, let's kill him. And I think they kind of were reaching that point, you know, after so many years. And what I love is it I almost see like a parallel between like the 90s DC and the 60s, like Marvel, because that was something Stan Lee said about Spider-Man was he was like, you know what? We're all going under anyway. I'm just going to start writing what I want to write.
Yeah.
And that's when he created Spider-Man, who was just the most relatable character. And that's what made Marvel what it is today. And I think DC kind of had a similar moment in the 90s where they're like, you know what? Our, you know, sales are dwindling. We don't know where to go with this. Let's just kill Superman. And then that led to a whole bunch of other crazy stuff, including one of my other favorite storylines from the 90s, which is Green Lantern losing his crap and going insane and like destroying the entire Green Lantern.
It was like, 95, 94, something like that?
That was
about it after the fact. I mean,
The return of Superman leads directly into the Emerald Twilight, which is the storyline of...
Because it had zero hour and came after all that.
Yeah, that eventually leads to Zero Hour. And
Aquaman comes back with losing a hand. And because I almost want to go back to Tim Burton Batman when everything went dark, and we can go back to Frank for that. But everything went dark with Batman. So we make a lot of money because they start bringing out darker Batmans and then that dark Superman death. And then everything went dark, 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 dark. Let's go dark because we can darker go. And they did. They went nuts with 0 hour.
Is that the same time that like the original Green Lantern? Well, I guess not the original, not the Golden or Silver Age one, but is that where he blew up Coast City or something?
Yeah. He killed.
So he didn't blow up Coast City, but another villain did.
Yeah.
And that's what drove him crazy, because that was his entire hometown, all his family, his girlfriend. They all died.
He said, we don't need these guys anymore. We don't need these people. He's like, we're going to get rid of all this stuff. And he just kind of lost it.
That's where they decided he was possessed by Parallax later on.
Yeah.
Which was a cool idea. The guy who wrote all that did a great idea. He really did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's another great storyline. Yeah, it is. I'm totally bad at the names, too.
I got all these brain problems.
Hal Jordan. Yeah, he's got.
No, not Hal Jordan. I'm talking about the writer. I can't think of the writer's name. Hal Jordan, I remember. Yeah. Alan Scott's the original.
Right. That was the Silver Age dude with the tin.
I met the writer to the original Green Lantern back in 1996. I got to meet that guy, have him sign a comic book where he came back in the 80s, right before they did the whole Crisis on Infinite Earth. He got to come back and draw, and you can see the old 1940s style.
Oh, really?
Drawing. Yeah, and he drew an old Green Lantern comic book where he got to draw everybody. You can see it's really 1940s looking style, but it's cool. Right. Nice. And he got to sign it. No, it was really neat to meet him. And I said, thank you. That's why I really started learning about Alan Scott. I didn't understand. I'd seen his picture before. I didn't understand how all that had you know, fixed in and fit in. And Alan Scott was so different because he was more of a magical Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And he was allergic, if you will call it that. You know, his weakness was things of wood. And because he was more, he hung around like a train area, because what happened was that's where the creator was. When he was a kid, he'd walk around the woods, around the train stations and all that. And so he basically wrote like what he was around when he was a kid. And so he's like, okay, there's magical monsters in the forest. And that's where Green Lantern first started. If it hadn't been for that, we wouldn't gone further to Hal Jordan. Where'd that come from?
Yeah.
Well, back in the 1950s, when they rewrote it all, people were starting to go into space and all that. And I'm sure you already know this, but Hal Jordan's based off of the actor. Cool Hand Luke.
Paul Newman.
Paul Newman. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and Dave Niven was Sinestro. That's where they based that on. Dave Niven, good old actor.
We were talking about Dave Niven the other day.
He was in Pink Panther.
Right. Oh yeah. Okay.
Oh
yes.
Nice. So I see that.
So good stuff. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry, bringing out my ignorance of intelligence.
No, that's awesome.
So then they brought, I guess, if we, you know, we've talked, of course, about the death and return of Superman, of course, and of course, the Green Lantern. But the other, like, the big thing, and this is something I remember from the 90s with these big stories, in order to get even more money. I mean, we did have a video game tie-in already to get for Superman money, because there was the death of Superman, death and return of Superman video game. But they started bringing out novelizations. And I remember reading, that's where I first read the entire Nightfall storyline, and a novelization about that thick. That had from the beginning where they introduced Bane, and Batman was broken. Somebody found a way to beat him, and it encompassed. I mean, it didn't have every little comic included, Because there's some of the sets I see you've got there. I've checked some out from the library. I mean, there are so many different stories, even with Azrael and all these different things. The the novelization skipped a lot of the stories just to kind of keep focused on Bruce Wayne, you know, healing back up and Azrael really just going freaking crazy to the return of Bruce Wayne as Batman. But oh my goodness, and the detail in the novelization, I loved that. You got to get in Bruce's head as he's Batman at the beginning, and his thought process as he's fallen off of something is like, okay, I must go limp. If I stiffen up, I'll break my bones, and all these different things. You think, wow, what it must be like to be Batman and always thinking all these strategies all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wonder, you know, I wondered if the comic had been written that well, where you're in his head that much as the novelization was. But I don't think I've read the entire thing in the comic. I mean, I've read some of the Azrael stuff, and I have some of that.
I mean,
trying to get the actual comics of this, even back when it was coming out, was hard because people would find out this was going to happen, and people who had never bought a comic in their life was suddenly trying to get a copy because they knew one day eBay would be a thing. So,
Yeah, exactly. I think they, the comics usually, you know, because they tend to make good use of the, you know, that old thought balloon.
Yeah, the green box or whatever.
As well as like the, you know, you'll often have the character's thoughts in the little caption box or whatever. I don't know how that would compare to the novel, but it's usually pretty good at capturing, like, here's what they're thinking and strategizing and all that.
I know Marvel was bad about that in the 90s. They'd have the entire book would be thought balloons, especially in X-Men. X-Men was the kings of angst. I have entire X-Men comics of this. We're going to angst around about all the things I'm concerned about. Angst. And because that was our generation, Gen X, we were angsty. Right. I'm sorry. Spider-Man had the whole thing where he was angsting around and eventually decided he wasn't going to be Peter Parker anymore. And he was just going to be Spider-Man. I am the spider. And he was just thought process of angst. The 90s was loaded with it. So, I'm pretty sure the thought balloons and Batman were probably huge. Because if there's any guy who's got angsty issues, it's Batman.
I think one of the best comics to do the balloons and have you going back and forth. I like that Batman had a blue one. Superman had a red one. And this is the Superman-Batman comics.
Yeah.
And they had them together. And I love how you see Bruce say, Clark is too much this, and Clark is he's too thoughtful, he's too this, too that. And then he'd say, I wish I was more like him. And then they'd have Superman saying, Bruce is he's too dark, he's too this, he's too moody, I wish I was more like him. And I was like, I love that they're the opposite. But see, I love them both.
I
love how you go back and forth, and they basically define each other, and they both want to be like each other. And I love that. They're the best of both, you know?
totally agree. Yeah.
It's awesome.
But once again, this was, I think, the creation of Bane must have been in a similar thing with Doomsday, where they were looking at Batman. Batman, given enough time to prep, can beat anybody because he's that smart. He will find a way. He'll be prepared before he goes into battle. Bane was something created to, like, we have to have something that Batman can't figure out to get a match on or can outsmart him. And Bane knew how to beat Batman. Wear him out. Bust everybody out of Arkham. Let him wear himself out, trying to recapture everybody. And then when he's got nothing left, bam, break.
Yeah.
I was like, brilliant.
It's interesting that both the one who defeated Superman and the one who defeated Batman were both completely new.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you would expect. Okay. If anyone's going to defeat Superman, it's got to be Lex Luthor. Uh-huh. And if anyone's going to defeat Batman, it's got to be Joker. But instead they're like, nah, we got Doomsday, this crazy monster out of nowhere. And then we've got Bane, this just criminal mastermind strategizer who's all juiced up. Is just going to be the one.
I think there's a steroid commentary.
What we need to do is have Joe Schumacher write for Bane.
Oh no.
Monkey work.
They did that in both the Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin, and they also did it in the cartoons as well, Batman Adventures, where they kind of dumbed him down.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
He was smart. Like that's how you defeat Batman, is you have to be really smart and you have to strategize and you have to put these puzzles into place beforehand.
He was not stupid.
Yeah.
The character.
Yeah. Now I do actually know of where Batman had previously died. There's one of the first comics I ever bought. I think in middle school, I had like a gift certificate to one of the bookstores at the mall, and I found a graphic novel. I don't remember how many issues the series ran, but there was the Many Deaths of Batman. And that I had to get it because it intrigued me. And what it was, somebody had kind of figured out, well, Batman had to have been trained by all like the best of all these different things. And they systematically started killing people who were experts, race car driver, expert fighters, experts, you know, strength things. And some of these were actually people that had trained Batman, but he would kill them and then dress them up as Batman and leave the body. And the very first issue of it is a completely silent issue, except for at one point, Commissioner Gordon wants to check the body. He's like, I would know if this really was Batman's body.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the morgue. And before he goes to pull the mask off, he looks over at somebody who was with him and says, get out. But that's the only line of dialogue. It's all just told through pictures. It's brilliant. But he goes and pulls off the mask. And it's like, no, this guy couldn't be Batman. So he's like, but it's kind of funny. It's like towards the end of the issue, after we've already seen like, oh, my gosh, we saw Batman dead at the beginning of this comic. At the end, Batman is going to catch him. It's just some random crook or whatever. And he hauls him into, and you see him hauling him into a police station, dropping this crook off. And all the cops are looking at Batman like, and they show him a newspaper that says, you're dead. And that's the end of the first issue. You know?
It reminds me of kind of like something you see on the movie Unbreakable, where the villain is getting all these newspapers things, but he's like trying to figure out you see at the end of the film, he's trying to set people up and he's killing people just to basically find someone who's unbreakable. So imagine something like that.
And I think that's really the first comic I got to see that really presented Batman as the detective, because he's trying to figure out who is murdering all these people and dressing them up as me and why. Which I can't remember the whole why, other than the person was a lunatic. I mean, you're murdering, it's a serial killer. I mean, geez.
Right. There's a Magna P.I. that's similar to that, actually.
Well, of course there is. And he's, this is the other favorite thing is Magna P.I.
I love lots of things, but I got wrestling, a Hulk Hogan on here.
Which is why I'm wearing a wrestling shirt here, too. So
I got lots of stuff.
Whole other topic.
Things I love.
We love everything, almost. So. But yeah, it was great to be able to, and heck, I remember it's in 89, we were down in Arkansas doing like a, there was, I think we were going to that show down there, but we went into a town to go shopping, and there was like a Detective Comics that was actually really good. It was actually, had something to do with the Ku Klux Klan that he was tracking down.
I still have it.
But I remember we sat in the back of the van reading these Batman comics and Detective Comics, and I think growing up, watching on Super Friends, and watching the Adam West, you don't get the concept of the detective. And that's getting into the 90s. Batman series really brought out the Dark Knight detective concept.
It was the Detective Comics Annual of 1989. And what I loved about the back of it, well, I still have it. What I love about it was that was the first time I got to see a Rogues Gallery. Of his favorites. I mean, the people he fights. Mm-hmm. And the Joker looks similar to Jack Nicholson. Because, you know, that was the movie coming out. Right. And it says Jack Napier on there, you know. And at the time, that's what it said on there. And then also it had Poison Ivy, it had Catwoman, it had all these different characters who I knew of a lot of them. New Two-Face. Yeah. And all that. But this kind of brought a lot of people to light, where I got to know a lot of those people. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I already knew Scarecrow a little bit, but now I got to know him a lot. And I was like, this is so great. And
especially, like I said, the animated series really reintroduced us all to all these villains, and even made Mr. Freeze a more interesting villain than he had ever been. The first time I seen him was in the 60s series, and he's terrible. But then Mr. Freeze suddenly got a backstory.
Yeah, gave him an awesome, like, emotional backstory where you almost like care about him.
Yeah,
and also introduced like Harley Quinn didn't exist for the cartoon.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
And now that's like an iconic like fan favorite thing.
Yeah.
And I just love the art that went into the Batman.
Paul Dini.
In terms of storytelling and just like the film noir vibe. And
that's it.
And I was watching this video about, because of the restrictions on what you could or could not show on the cartoon, they had to find a lot of kind of workarounds in order to like tell some of these stories, because it's Batman, it's inherently violent, and so, you know, and they couldn't just do the old 1960s like bam smash pow every single time, you know, somebody gets hit, but just the way that kind of forced them to adapt their storytelling, and like, oh, you know, in this scene they might have to show it in shadows on the wall, or in this time they might have to just kind of leave it to the imagination a little bit. And that actually made it even more artistic.
Yeah, even better. And I was telling someone that recently, these kids said, this needs to be rated R, this needs to be rated R, this needs to be rated R. And I said, you know, that's the thing. You think that rated R makes everything better. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, the movie Jaws, they were restricted on what they could do, and it made it a much better, scarier film because your imagination cannot be beat. And I don't even know, and I'm not saying this for a fact, but I don't even know if Jaws would still be around if they could have done everything that they wanted to do in the beginning of that.
Yeah.
You know,
right?
Because originally, if you see the script and the way they had it drawn out, in the beginning of the movie, Jaws is supposed to jump out, grab the woman, pull her in, and all this stuff. But that movie is so scary and wonderful. And the same with that show. A lot of things they couldn't do made it such a dark, wonderful, and that cartoon changed the way cartoons are made to this day. The great,
even Mask of the Phantasm going out into theaters even changed because with the being in the theater, they're like, you know what, we can have them bust out one of the Joker's teeth. We can actually kill a few people.
Yeah, so that 1993 Christmas, two movies came out the same day, two of my favorite movies, both of them are Dana Delaney, Batman the Animated Movie. And
Tombstone,
both in the same day.
Nice.
I went out and saw them both right then and there.
Yes.
But because of the success of Batman, and the last thing we can really dive into is Superman, the animated series, because I don't know what else they call it. But the fun thing about Superman, the animated series, and it was weird for me watching it because I was so used to the Christopher Reeve Superman where he's almost invincible. In order to keep it interesting, they powered Superman down a little bit. That way,
I noticed that. Yeah, I remember
he could actually get himself knocked for a loop a few times before, in the end, he would win.
He would hold himself back sometimes. He'd hold himself back because sometimes you see that he would hold himself back. He would try really hard not to push himself. He wanted to give him a chance. Finally, you pushed him, and he'd go for it. Now, this is not
even with bullets, because
we have in the movies, we see Brandon Routh getting shot in the eye and not even have an effect.
Yeah.
But then I'm watching the animated series, and I actually have a helicopter gun is hitting Superman, and it's actually pushing him back off of a roof. Wow. In the movies, he'd be like, oh, you're shooting me? I don't care how powerful your gun is. No big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
But in that animated series, if you're shooting himself, he's kind of like, oh, hey.
You know.
Yeah. Now, one thing in that cartoon, I must admit, now I like the music.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I can't help it. Anytime I see Superman, I can't help but hear the John Williams music.
But they do kind of don't they kind of tribute that a little bit in the soundtrack for the cartoons? I feel like
you have something that's very similar vibe.
Yeah.
Batman certainly did.
They had the
Tim Burton's music a little bit.
But
there.
Man, when you have the Christopher Reeve, I meant to say John Williams music, they didn't do that, but they had something that had a very good sound to it, you know.
Yeah.
And I do like it. They had, because even the sound to that music, and you're like, okay, they're trying really hard to sound similar without taking the copyright there, you know.
Yeah.
Which, although Warner Brothers owned the music, they probably could have done it. I guess they thought they were far enough away from the old Superman movies that they were like, oh, we can just come up with something new here, you know. Batman the Animated Series was still in the time of two Tim Burton films. They were like,
they might have wanted to distance themselves from Superman 4. So,
that could be it.
Not just that. Keep in mind, they were at the time trying to bring out a new Superman movie of Tim Burton's.
Right. With
Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. That was in the works at the time.
That's true. Yeah. With the weird Tim Burton translucent suit. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine if that had been made?
Yeah, that would have been strange. Not that I wouldn't have given Tim Burton a chance, or even Nicolas Cage, because people put him down now, but he was a good actor at the time. It's just that
he really commits to a role.
He does. He tries, but we'll see what would have happened. Who knows? But it might have been interesting, but I don't know. That would have been different.
Yeah, it would have. It would have.
Well, and he was going to be the long-haired Superman.
Yep, he would have.
It would have just been, it would have been almost, I think, like a early 90s time capsule.
It would have been.
It would not have been like Batman is, Tim Burton's Batman is timeless.
And not just that.
But I don't think that Superman.
And not just that.
Been.
That Superman also would have been in time with George Clooney's Batman.
Oh, geez.
If you think about
it. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Because when they first started talking of making it was in 96. And that was at the time when they were getting finished filming Batman and Robin.
Oh my gosh.
Oof. So that would not have been too good.
I will confess to seeing that in the theaters, I think at least twice.
Though, I saw it a couple of times in theaters. I'm sorry to say. I was trying to convince myself.
Did I go with you one of the times I went? I know I went with a girlfriend I had at the time.
I tried really hard to convince myself that I liked it. I really did try.
Yes.
Yeah. I tried. Man. It's not that bad of a movie. I was trying really hard.
Prepare for a bit of harvest. It's coming last.
That was terrible.
That was a terrible
one. I still watch it occasionally to force my... I don't mean watch it. What I mean is I watch
it. It's comedy. You could riff tracks that thing.
I had good times, but that film, oh...
Yeah, the film that killed the Batman franchise for a while.
Yes. Yeah.
Which they're about to do again with this new...
I guess I should give it a chance with the new movie.
I'm keeping an open mind.
Me too.
An open mind.
Batman, everybody has fussed about Spider-Man getting rebooted a couple of times. Like, Batman's had more reboots than Spider-Man, so everybody can just cool off.
He's had more reboots than he has blue boots.
Spider-Man felt like a shorter amount of time.
It was. Yeah.
Spider-Man, you had one movie ending in like 2005, and then the next one was like less than five... No, I'm 2000... Yeah, 2007. 2007. Then you had like another reboot in like 2010, 2011, something like that. That's pretty close together. Like weird.
Yeah.
My biggest problem is actually, I mean, because I love Tom Holland. My biggest problem is that they like made the suit too powerful.
Yeah.
And to me, that detracts from like, no, Spider-Man is powerful. Yeah, he has the powers.
You're right.
That's like giving Superman like a special suit, like that gives him extra powers. It's like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, they
got to sell toys.
They got to sell. They got to sell toys.
Right, they got to have toys for Batman.
No, you're
They're
right.
They're gonna do that anyway.
You're right.
Thanks, Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, you're right. It's like I remember when the toys came, even before him, when the toys came out, you had to have special glow in the dark green Batman,
camouflage Batman, night strike Batman.
Yeah,
green with white lightnings.
I had a couple of those. I'm like, where was this in the movie? I don't care. It's a toy. I'll buy it.
Not even in the cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, but here's all right. So here's the question. And I will allow animated versions as well. Who was the best Batman?
Honestly, I think the best Batman.
It's tough, I know.
There's a lot of
it's either Ben Affleck or Christian Bale. I actually loved both of them. I was surprised by how much I really liked. I like Ben Affleck as Batman, not necessarily how that worked out in like Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
So I feel like just because of the terrible writing in that, I'd have to hand it to Christian Bale. But I think I really liked Ben Affleck as Batman. I liked that character, and I liked the style and the costume and kind of the more gritty approach they gave him. Where he's just down to shoot stuff. Like, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he kind of made up for, although I don't actually dislike that Daredevil movie, honestly.
Yeah.
That wasn't bad.
I thought I didn't dislike it. And then I went back and watched it and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah,
There's a lot wrong with it, but it's kind of fun.
It's not that he did bad.
Yeah.
He was fine.
Yeah.
It was just
the way
something's just not.
Yeah, they were still in that awkward CGI phase where they were trying to where they could.
Yeah.
And that was rough.
I got to say, if I'm ever going to watch it again, because I have it, but I got to say,
the director's cut, it's got some scenes that help flesh out a lot more of how he managed to take down the Kingpin in a legal fashion with going in. And what is it, Snoop Dogg that actually has an appearance as playing a criminal?
But Michael Clark Duncan, even though I got to say, you can't beat the guy playing Kingpin, newer one. But Michael Clark Duncan did do a good job. He did do a good job. Michael Clark Duncan did.
Yeah, he was a good Kingpin.
Yeah, he was.
Still, though, for me, my best Batman's still Kevin Conroy.
Yeah. As far as
never the suit, Kevin Conroy has he's been my favorite. I mean, up to that, Michael Keaton was surprised to me. I got to say, because I'm used to like Mr. Mom and seeing all of these comedies. When he was playing Batman, I was like, well, okay. But he's the first one I think that presented, because when I'd grown up watching Adam West, there wasn't much difference between Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yeah.
And even in Super Friends, you didn't really see Bruce Wayne. But then suddenly you get Michael Keaton and he's, oh, hi, I'm Bruce Wayne and I'm Batman. And suddenly we had this difference in dynamic. Then Kevin Conroy, even seeing some behind the scenes stuff of Mask of Phantasm, he talks about how, Batman's those darker corners of a man. And then Bruce Wayne is very jovial. And he had a very different thing in his voice that he would do that I loved that
different personalities. Yeah, he's like, Kevin,
hey, what's up?
Yeah. And I like that everybody's trying to replicate that. I mean, that's something Christian Bale, everybody likes to make fun of this. But at least Christian Bale was putting that effort to make him sound different. Ben Affleck, I think, had the benefit that they did, like, it made sense, though, that he would have, like, a voice modification in the cowl.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, I think, had benefited from that little trick. He didn't have to do a different voice.
Yeah.
But I think Ben Affleck did better than I expected him to do. I mean, he wasn't bad. Yeah. I was kind of like, I don't know, but you know, hats off to Ben Affleck for doing a good job. But
it was not, I didn't care for those movies much, but it wasn't him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Henry either. You know, Henry Cavill.
Yeah. I think Henry Cavill could be a great Superman if they write him right.
Yeah. So say it's not him. Yeah. I would say
he is a great Superman. Yeah. And I liked him in Man of Steel. I didn't like everything about Man of Steel, but neither. I liked him.
I was thinking of the wrong movie. I'm gonna say I couldn't stand the Lex Luthor, and it's not that I don't like the actor. The actor himself is not a bad actor. It's just him as Lex is not Lex. Yeah. But here's the thing: when I first saw Henry Cavill was long time ago in the Man of Count of Monte Cristo, and I said to my aunt, I was out seeing my aunt. She was still with me at the time. I was at the theater watching her. I looked over her. I said, "He would be a great Superman someday." And this is back 2001 or something.
Oh, that was
And she said, "You're always seeing that, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah, but he would be." And sure enough, and in fact, whenever I saw that he was going to be Superman, I said, "I wish I could talk to my aunt. She's in heaven now." Mm-hmm. But I said, "I wish I could talk to my aunt because she would be laughing right now." See, she says, "See, you're right."
To be fair, you also said that about Steve Buscemi.
I said that about Bill Cosby. No, I'm kidding.
No.
I didn't mean like
those,
that.
Those didn't pan out quite as
I know, thought Don Knotts would do it.
Stopped clock is right once, you know, twice a day.
Yeah, so twice a day. That's right.
There you go.
Don Knotts didn't quite do the role right, but
well, we got to start wrapping this up though. But you didn't get to say who was your favorite Batman.
Oh well, I love so many, but I'll have to go with you, Kevin Conroy. First of all, because he's gotten to do it so much longer, so it's like solid part of it.
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton, of course, as far as live action. Only because I was surprised, but I do got to give a salute to Adam West for one reason.
I still love Adam West
because that's how Batman was at the time. When people say people always say Batman was never like that. Like bull at the time,
in the 60s.
He was that way.
Yeah,
and Adam West really didn't have anyone to look at. It's true they had the cereals and all that. I'm talking about not what you eat. I'm talking about the cereals of the movies.
Yeah,
but he really didn't have an actor to look at, and so there really was no difference between Batman and Bruce Wayne in the comics and all that.
And the comics at that time were very like cheesy. The 50s comics for Batman were just so goofy. They were.
They kind of really had no choice.
If he went back to like the 40s, the early Batman was actually dark and he was just freaking, he'd kill people.
Yeah.
Like he just, I have a collection of his old comic, like originals. And like, he's just like breaking people's legs and tossing them out of windows and stabbing them. And
Because they're more like the
old. He'd have to like, go back 20 years. Because
they were more like the old books that you'd read. But what happened was once you got that, I'll say perverted man who started saying that comics were for perverts. He said that, and really, he was a pervert.
Because
he would say that Batman and Robin and others were getting people to think immorally, when in reality, that wasn't the way it was. Yeah. So therefore, they had to watch everything they made. You couldn't have anybody fight hardly. It had to be they're taking on robots and aliens, and everything changed. And so therefore, those poor people had to watch everything. That's why Adam West and them had to be cheesy and corny, because comic books were corny and cheesy. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Anyways, like I said, we need to wrap this up.
Let's wrap it.
So everybody, thanks, Chris Carlin, for coming along
nice
here.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah,
sir.
Thank you so much. This is fun.
And make sure y'all check out Stunning and Brave, which it's very different. Instead of being fanboy, he gets to be, like I said, a smarcasm. That is your word of the day. But Stunning and Brave, I warn you now, you will be slightly offended, but you're supposed to laugh at yourself a little bit because it's an equal opportunity offender. They make fun of everybody and everything, especially if you consider yourself to be pretty woke. You're probably going to get pretty offended because we're going to make fun of you because, wow. But
definitely.
On the other side of things, we go to extremes too and do really dumb things, and we're not afraid to make fun of that too. So if you can laugh at anything, you're going to love this show. By the way, I got to acknowledge the fact I see your Steamboat Willie back there in the corner. I just spotted. Woohoo!
I got one.
Yes.
Little miniature Steamboat Willie. Awesome. I have a giant plush one over there that actually my wife got me for Christmas one time.
Oh, nice.
And he whistles his little tune and dances. I love it. Yes. Okay. We have to acknowledge Mickey Mouse because that's the sort of show that we kind of are. Oh, boy. Yes. All right. But anyway, so everybody, like I said, stunning and brave. If you've got the guts to be able to laugh at anything and deal with some smart aleckness, plus join the autonomous zone, the stunning and brave. I guess we just call it SPAZ, S-B-A-Z.
Yeah.
Because the fun part is... you're taking a break right now, but every week there will be what is problematic about blank, and it could be about anything. And it's fun to see some of the comments of what people come up with that's problematic about. It could be pizza. What's problematic about pizza? And people come up with the greatest stuff, and you use it all in the show. It is hilarious. It is a collective bunch of weirdos with funny ideas, and they get to just throw it all together and present it to you. It's definitely, y'all got to check it out. It's fun.
That's a Facebook group, the Stunning and Brave Autonomous Zone, or SBAZ. Yeah, we welcome anyone who wants to get in on the fun there.
But yeah, we got to remember, we're all just being funny. Sometimes people take it too seriously and forget, hey, we're making fun of stuff. We're just having a laugh, because you have to have a laugh at some of the crazy things in our crazy world.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're going to cringe. Okay. And that is going to wrap it up here for us here at the Fandom Nexus. And where, of course, we do want to remind you to get lost in an adventure. Become a lost boy or pixie over at neverlandpodcast.com. You can join our official little fan club. It's just for fun. We want to, of course, thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhight of the Wilhight and Wall Show for helping us out with our intro. Remember, you can send us an email, podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are Neverland PCast. Facebook, of course, you can find both a group and a fan page under Neverland Podcast. You can also leave us a voicemail, 816-226-6492, and donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/neverlandpodcast, where I have an exclusive content this week. I have the unedited video of our conversation with Chris Cowan, because I had to trim it down quite a bit. And also, of course, I did get video because we were on Skype. So I have the unedited video available only for our Patreon supporters. So go over there and check it out. All right. We will see you next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.